everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our program. We are off and running on December the 18th, the Wednesday midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. And Tom, it's more like, our friends, I've got some friends in Australia and New Zealand, and everybody always says, oh, it doesn't feel like Christmas.
So well, we're sharing their summer in down the, under weather?
Yeah, that's kind of the way, that's where I'm going with that. I mean, this could be like a typical Christmas week in Sydney or something. We're talking about almost 80 degrees, probably the warmest place in the United States right now to be, yeah.
And we're apparently close to setting a couple of records a few days during this period.
Might be record highs, but we're going to talk more about climate with Dr. Zach Guido in a minute. But I do want to promote the fact that, and I'm proud of it, we'll begin our 15th year with the Buckmaster radio program in January. And I think, let's see, that launches me into the 37th year in radio and television in the Tucson area. We're coming to you from the Bustos Media Complex. We've got five radio stations under one roof. And as part of that complex, in one of our studios, where I am right now, it's the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Also the place for all of our podcasts going back, 14 years full of content there on the website. When we do our telephone interview, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor, he's our contributor on climate. Just so delighted to have a stable of people that are so talented in their fields. I've got about 24 contributors on a regular basis to my program. It's Dr. Zach Guido, an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience. Acronym is AIR, appropriately enough. AIR coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. The traveling guy is back. Dr. Guido has been on the move, a little time in East Africa in an area I love very much, that area of Kenya. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, and thanks for having me, as always.
That was a quick trip. That's a long trip for a week, flying into Nairobi, isn't it?
It is. It's not enough time to get acclimatized to the time zone. I end up getting up at 4 a.m. and going to bed at 6 p.m. So, but it's one of the perks of what I do, that I get to travel to cool places and do some research and think about the climate and how people interact with the climate. So.
And it's interesting because the lakes area, for folks who have been to East Africa, know about the Rift, R-I-F-F, lakes. And one of the lakes, I guess several now, which had been close to bone dry, the water's coming back.
Well, this is what surprised me. So this isn't why I was there. We were there. I have a few projects that look at the role of development in helping people better cope with climate and weather extremes. And so that we were there working with the World Food Program in northern Kenya, in this area called Turkana. And there is a large Rift Valley lake there, Lake Turkana. And yeah, when we were there, I mean, it's surprising. It's an arid region, and one might expect that the lakes aren't on the rise, but for like 15 years, they've been increasing. And, I did a little bit of like research to try to figure out why, and it's still an ongoing question. But yeah, I found that really, really quite fascinating. And in a context, and these are pastoralists up there, and, there is recurring drought, and, the World Food Program, for example, and other UN bodies are up there like trying to, help people survive during those really lean times.
And so, the Turkana people, they kind of move from, they're nomadic people, right?
Yeah. I think they're semi-nomadic in the sense like they have homes, but they take their animals to different places at different times. And, they have to walk and amble further during drought periods, and then there's much less forage, let's say, and then that creates a lot of challenges amongst like inner, you know, village sort of relation dynamics and that sort of thing, because all of the animals are sort of vying for the same, you know, limited.
The menu is quite limited. I get to talk to cool people. You get to go to cool places, and I'm always fascinated with your travels. And for maybe a half dozen trips you've made over to Bangladesh. You've got another trip coming up over there. You know, I'm fascinated with the fact that you've got millions of people, tens of millions of people that survive on a basic floodplain.
Yeah, so this is really interesting too, because you know, part of this one project has a research design looking at like northern Kenya, like the drylands, looking at the way people live with drought. And then Bangladesh is sort of on the wetter side of things. And when I first went there, I mean, it is really mind-blowing. First of all, there's 100 million people, probably more, 130 million people that live in a relatively small area, probably smaller than Arizona, right? So it's somewhere. It's not a big area, huge amount of people. And yeah, most of them live on these floodplains of these major rivers, like the Ganges, the Brahmaputra, the Meghna. And so, you know, Bangladesh has, in my field, is sort of the poster child for climate vulnerability, you know, and it's because, you know, there's massive rivers and not a lot of area and massive amounts of people living on these low elevation areas. And yeah, it's a climate change hotspot because of that, but it's also a weather hotspot. I mean, there are floods and challenges with living with floods have been part of that history, you know, going back millennia, obviously, you know, since the rise of the Himalaya, like 65 million years ago, right? So how people are able to marshal those risks and the new risks that are imposed as society changes, and also some of the risks go away, those sorts of dynamics is, you know, part of the research that we're doing, just trying to learn from them, really. And yeah.
University of Arizona climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido with us. And from Bangladesh, we come back to Arizona, halfway around the world, and we're a climate hotspot too. I'm looking at some new research, and this is something you've talked about on our program before, in the journal Science Advances. This was a new study done by a group, some of them out of the UCLA Oceanic and Atmospheric Sciences. And what they're saying, Zach, is again, what you've been saying, that the study looked at drought trends over 75 years in Arizona and 10 other western states, going back to 1948. It concluded that until 1999, declining rainfall and other precipitation was the principal cause of drought conditions. But it's changed, and now its temperature increases have been the biggest driving force behind the 21st century drought.
Yeah, that is a. I've seen that paper, and I'm trying to grasp onto some of the details, so I can't comment specifically about it.
It's done by a colleague, somebody in your profession over at UCLA, Dr. F.U. I'm not sure how that is pronounced, but Fu maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right, but it is a. It's an important insight, and that is that we can tend to think about drought as being precipitation driven, and it can be, and it depends on where you are. But there's also a component of it that is temperature related, and the temperature comes in a couple different ways. It comes in just, you know, higher temperatures cause evaporation to increase. So it evapotranspiration, really. So it changes the way that the land surface experiences that rain, and it can actually dry out your landscape a lot quicker. So, you know, let's say, you know, in 1970, when you have a rainfall event in the winter that drops, let's say, an inch of rain for the sake of numbers, You know, versus when you had that same rainfall event falling on the same landscape, you know, in 2020, you know, and that, and the temperature in 2020 is on the order of, you know, degree and a half warmer, that water is less effective at staying on the landscape because of the temperature. And so you get this amplification of the hydrologic cycle. You get this drying that is amplified by the temperature signal. And so I think this paper is saying, okay, so if we look at drought, like, and we split drought into the components related to the actual amount of water that falls on the landscape and the amount of water that is dealt with by the temperature, you know, which matters more? And up until this inflection point, I can't comment on the methods here, but sort of temperature wasn't as influential up until what? The 2000, and then it became more influential than precipitation. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that precipitation doesn't matter. They're both going on. It's just, what's the relative fraction that's contributing to drought that's caused by reductions in precipitation or changes in precipitation, and what's the fraction caused by changes in temperature? And that matters, of course, because as we move forward, you know,
assuming temperatures keep rising and that keeps increasing evaporation.
Right.
So you're going to get droughts that will be more intense.
Right. That is
presumably.
That is the implication.
Yes.
I would just modify. There is no assumption about, in my, this is as scientifically assured as there is, and that is that temperature, it will continue to rise given the energy imbalance that we have. So the question then becomes, is that effect of a rising temperature offset by changes in rainfall, which it can be, right? You can be in a world that's warmer that actually has more rainfall in a given landscape. In fact, there is physical reason for thinking as much, and that is that as the atmosphere warms, it can actually hold more moisture. And so the question becomes, does rainfall change in ways that compensate for an increasing temperature? And the rainfall part of this equation and projecting that into the future is much more complicated than temperature for a variety, the processes, the physics behind it, the spatial variability, the temporal variability is much more difficult to sort out than temperature is. So that's a remaining uncertainty about future aridity in the Southwest.
All right, we've got a lot more with Dr. Zach Guido. What happened to La Nina? What kind of year was this for precipitation? Where do we go in 2025? How is it looking? But right now, I know one thing, how things are looking toward Christmas, and we're 1 week away from Christmas Day. That means it is time to put in the call or stop in to Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Stop in, grab some of those great Christmas cookies. They're packaged beautifully for you, all ready to go. Put in an order for dessert for Christmas dinner or Christmas Eve dinner. Steve's got you covered. Steve has you covered and the team up at Mona's. And as I discovered on Saturday, they do a fantastic birthday cake. That double layer, I'm still just dreaming about that double layer carrot cake that was rolled out for my birthday. Wow. And it came from Mona's, and they do such a great job. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. We're talking climate and weather with Dr. Zach Guido. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition, 1 week away now from Christmas. Dr. Zach Guido is with us, our contributor on climate, and Zach, assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR. So we've been drier and certainly warm temperatures near 80 degrees this time of year. Get you close to records. And I was just reflecting, Zach, that if this was 6 months fast forward, whoa, we'd be talking about 115 degrees, wouldn't we?
I know, it comes on quick, though, right?
You put a big high pressure area over Arizona in the, you know, this time of year, I love it. Yeah. 80's fine.
No,
now,
this is great.
Six months in advance from now, uh-uh.
Now, this is why we live here.
Yeah. But what happened to La Nina this time?
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because there's a lot of interesting things going on. So first of all, last year we had a El Nino, and then the 3 years prior to that, so 2020, 21, and 22 were all La Nina. So we're back to a La Nina. It hasn't officially materialized yet. It's been sort of hovering around what the thresholds that are for La Nina, but the expectation is that it will actually cross those thresholds. It'll probably...
From the neutral phase. Because there are three phases, for folks that don't know. La Nina and its counterpart, El Nino, are conditions, climate conditions, that are part of a natural cycle called the El Nino Southern Oscillation.
Correct. Yeah. So, and this is a tropical Pacific phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And so it's there's a lot of different ways to measure it. And we could talk a little bit about this because there's this winter is causing people to think about measuring it in a slightly different way. But one of the main ways to measure it is in this large area in the tropical Pacific Ocean. So like a 1,000 kilometer by 5,000 kilometer area. And you look at the average temperatures, in that area. And when they when they're above, let's say, a half a degree Celsius, or higher, it's an El Nino event. And when they're below a half a degree below average or less, it's a La Nina.
And we're talking about the surface temperature of the water.
Yeah, it's like to a depth of 100 meters or so.
And people are saying, well, how do you know? Well, there are monitoring stations throughout the Pacific.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's monitored. This year it's a weak La Nina, or it will become a weak La Nina. In the Southwest, we tend to be drier than average during a weak La Nina event. What's interesting this year is there tends to be strong correlations between the strength of the event and the precipitation anomaly. And this year's forecasts and projected impacts in terms of precipitation look a lot more like a La Nina than it's currently showing. And so that's causing people to think about, so in other words, the patterns that are emerging and that have happened over the last month, like, suggest that we're already in a La Nina, but our monitoring area is not picking up that La Nina quite yet. And one of the explanations is, well, the most of the oceans around that area, in fact, globally, are much warmer than average. And so when you have like a trend in sea surface temperature changes, right? So an increasing trend, when you increase it by, let's say, a half a degree Celsius, well, you're also increasing that area inside that box. And you're just, that's an absolute measure, really. And it becomes harder to actually crest that threshold, right? So these new measures are saying, well, maybe it's better that we account for that trend and look at the difference, the relative difference between that area in the tropical Pacific and what's around it. And when you do that, the patterns that you're expecting match better than they currently do. So there's a physical reason behind. Gradients matter, temperature gradients matter. So this isn't like just pattern matching. It's not just statistical. There's actually physical dynamics and explanations that are about why you do something like this. But what I find interesting is, I mean, science, climate science is an evolving field, you know, and we're always using sort of new conditions to question the way that we do things, to improve our monitoring, to improve our predictions. And so that's playing out.
What does it mean for us?
Yeah, so it means that even though we're sort of like hovering kind of in a neutral condition, maybe it crests to a La Nina, it looks La Nina. It looks very much like La Nina.
Which translates into?
Dry.
Dry.
Yeah, so if you look at all the models, all these weather models, climate models, seasonal forecast models, they're all calling for dry conditions in the Southwest.
And warmer than average conditions.
Well, that's a good question. Yes. Yeah. And part of that is a lot of the models are picking up on just the long-term trends. And so when you have long-term trends superimposed on sort of whatever the baseline conditions are, it's very easy to become warmer. So a lot of the trends in temperature... Sorry, the forecasts for temperature are, a lot of them are picking up on the long-term trend for warmer than average. Precipitation is much more variable, and there isn't as robust of trends in precipitation over time, and so it's not as affected by the trends, and it's more affected by these sort of internal dynamics like El Nino and La Nina.
The record books will show this year was about average for precipitation in Tucson.
So over what period? So from
the 12-month period that will end on New Year's Eve.
So the calendar year.
Yeah, calendar year. Because we had kind of a so-so monsoon season.
Right. Yeah. November and December have been quite dry
for
Tucson. Yeah, I don't have those numbers handy. I don't doubt you.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it is worth noting that we haven't
had...
It's
hard to stump Zach, but there you go. Yeah.
It is worth noting that we haven't had any rain in a couple months.
No. And none of the forecasts are showing rain within the next 10 days. And when you get beyond 10 days, it is really throwing darts.
It is. So weather forecasting stops between 7 and 10 days, and then more statistical and other kinds of methods are used to project longer
using
term.
AI, right?
So that's a conversation.
I know, for another time.
Yeah. That field is moving so fast.
It is,
weather
isn't
forecasting.
It really is.
Yeah. It would be worth talking about because I'm interested. Some of the newest, weather forecast models that are using like neural networks, things from Huawei and even the European Center and Google are actually outperforming the best physically based numerical models to a large extent. And it's really quite interesting to understand why that is. And I mean, any improvements in our ability to accurately forecast events, is such a society, has such a societal benefit. I think a little bit of the challenges in these AI models is trying to understand why they're doing it. And I think that's going to be a tricky part. Like for me, for research, it's always about what's causing this?
We'll pick up on that, Zach, on perhaps your next visit. And I want to wish you and yours a wonderful holiday season. Thank you for your participation in our program. We always have such wonderful conversations about climate. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
Midweek edition of Buckmaster continues after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Christmas now 1 week away. Still time to get over to Green Things. Green Things not only has the greenery for you to brighten up your holidays, but we've been talking a lot about their sister business on site, Zocalo Village. Those punched tin Christmas trees from Mexico. Unusual and very neat. I put a light under it, and it looks very Christmassy. Zocalo Village, part of the Green Things complex there at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They've been in business now since 1970, family-owned and operated. And the sister business, their website is zocalovillage.com. Stop by. I think you'll be very impressed, not only with the sales team there that not only points you in the right direction, they will walk you to the particular place you need for some enhancements to your garden and make things look very seasonal. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Speaking of seasonal, Christmas now a week away. Christmas a time to reflect on what matters most and hopefully focus on the values that we hold dear and close and dear. For many, though, it's a bittersweet holiday as we reflect on past Christmases, perhaps happier times. Joining me in studio, the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I'm a member. St. Philip's, really an institution in this community, a landmark, the church originally constructed in the 1930s at Campbell and River. It is a landmark here. Father Robert, always a pleasure.
It is good to be here.
Great to see you. And Christmas and the holidays accentuate feelings. If you're lonely, the holidays can make you feel more alone. If you're depressed, Father Robert, the holidays can make you feel more blue. But if you're happy, the holidays can also make you feel happier.
Yeah, I think so. It's all tied to, you know, there's so much is bound up with, you know, all those memories. And you know, there's a word in our liturgy where we say, do this in remembrance. And the Greek word for the word remembrance is anamnesis, but English is a bad translation. Remembrance doesn't quite get at it. The word anamnesis actually means a sort of memory alive all around you. So when we say do this in remembrance, we're saying do this as if what we are remembering is still happening around you. And I think that's what happens at the holidays, right? That these memories are alive all around us, and they sort of, you know, they're time away from time. And that I think that's why people are supposed to take off the 12 days of Christmas, because it's time away from time. And, you know, so which means all those memories come back, and it's as if everything is still happening all at once around you. It's poignant and sometimes bittersweet, but also sometimes a real source of joy when memories come back that you didn't even know were hanging around in there.
Well, sometimes people will reflect, well, that was my worst Christmas, or this was my best Christmas in such and such year. But there were a lot of Christmases where we may not really be focus so much on them, but what does emerge from that is kind of a general feeling of warmth and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was a kid, I was convinced that the only person who could cancel Christmas was my mother, because you know, leading up to it, there was always the stress of, you know, making sure every ornament was polished and every light was hung perfectly, and the 5,000 apple pies she made to give away as gifts were all
yeah. You've all reflected cooked. Before that she was a real perfectionist when it came to the holidays.
Well, not just the holidays.
And nothing ever good enough.
No, she always wanted everything just right. And so, as the years have gone by, I find myself doing the same thing. You know, I tend to have an eye for detail, as somebody once said in a not flattering way. That stuff takes us, you know, out of the moment, and it actually takes us away from giving the thing that we can give that's most important, which is ourselves, right? Our time, our presence, our sort of warmth, our sense of welcome. You know, we get thrown out of those things too easily by the kind of busyness of the time, thinking, oh, we have to have the perfect Christmas. And I think the whole point of the season is that the perfect Christmas was already had, and it was the first one. And so our job at Christmas, if we have one, is just to remember that and to give thanks for that. But it's also got a lot of other stuff bound up with it, doesn't it?
Well, so, and this is an area that you know very well from your past life with Brooks Brothers, where you were the youngest marketing director for that organization. By the way, are they someone bought the name Brooks Brothers, didn't they?
They're still slogging away.
Yeah. Well, where I was going with this, you obviously saw Christmases where, hey, this is how we drive sales with the Hallmark Christmas. I mean, if somebody landed in America from outer space or something and they looked at the TV commercials, they would think everybody is, you know, having a Hallmark Christmas in the United States.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that, you know, I think that actually gets to the root of some of that anxiety, is that we're all marketed this notion of a perfect Christmas. And, you know, and especially now on social media, we all get to see everyone's perfect Christmas tree, and we look at our dumpy thing and think, well, what am I doing wrong in my life?
I mean, where's my Brooks Brothers Christmas?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, but at the same time, there's something lovely about the kind of aspirational nature of the holiday, where we are doing our best to try and welcome people, and we're trying to be as warm an environment as possible. And churches do this too, right? We put a lot of energy into Christmas Eve, into welcoming people, but it's very easy for that stuff to get in the way of what's actually important about it sometimes. But one of the things we've done at St. Philip's to kind of remind ourselves of what's most important is, you know, Christmas Eve is the time when every church gets the most money they'll get the entire year. It's when everyone gives
big
money.
Revenue.
It
driver.
Is a big revenue driver. It's like Black Friday for us.
Yes.
And
yes.
So at St. Philip's, we decided to give it all away. So every dime we get
really?
On Christmas
every,
Eve,
everything's
every dime
going.
We get on Christmas Eve, yeah. We give away to community organizations. This year, there are a couple of different ones. There's the Missing Indigenous Women's Project that we're giving money to, the Innocence Project. And there's a prison reentry program that we're giving, so those three organizations we're giving our Christmas Eve offering to. And it's a way to remind ourselves that the important thing about this time is the way we serve the wider community. And for us, it's the way we show Christ's love to the wider community, sort of pointing to the reason for the season. And sort of for us that this year it's about sort of those different organizations, and each year we've done that in some different ways, some different organizations, and this year those are the three. And so I am appreciative to be in a congregation where that is something that we do and that we're able to do. Not every church can do that, but we are able to do that. And so to me it's an important statement about what's important to us.
Is St. Philip's now the largest, you have the largest parish in Arizona?
It is, yes.
Really? So Phoenix may be a lot bigger population-wise, but when it comes to the Episcopal community, they don't have a parish like St. Philip's with the kind of numbers that you guys
have. Yeah, there are a couple that are good size there, St. Barnabas and the cathedral there. Mm-hmm. But there are also a lot more Episcopal churches there, so I think that's kind of a little spread out.
Yeah. So, and every Christmas Eve, then there's a different group or groups that benefit from the gift-giving of generous people.
Absolutely. So as I always say, generosity unlocks generosity, and so when people are generous with us, we're able to be generous with the wider community. And that's paired with this year we're also doing another round of medical debt relief buying.
What is that about?
Yeah, so we raise money and we buy, the last round we bought $4.2 million of overdue medical debt in Southern Arizona. And I did not know
about this.
Yeah,
this is wonderful.
Yeah, we forgave the debt, and then we're doing another buy of about $3 million worth of medical debt this year and forgiving the debt so that people who are burdened by that kind of really sometimes backbreaking debt, it's one of the leading causes of bankruptcy in the country, as you know. And so for us as a church, we think that sort of our entire ethos is about forgiveness. And so we think that the debt forgiveness is also kind of at the core of our ministry. So that will be at about almost $7.5 million of medical debt we'll have bought and forgiven in the last 3 or 4 years.
Wow. Father Robert Hendrickson from St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, our guest here as we work our way to the Christmas Day, which is now a week away. We'll take a break right here. More with Father Robert, and perhaps we'll talk about some strategies to that folks listening may. Maybe some simple things that they can remember that might make their Christmas a little easier. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion regional transportation plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Lots of folks are going to have time off over the holidays. May I suggest, and it's not a bad drive at all, about a three-hour drive over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. So much to do over there, kind of the hallmark of what that area is about. The outdoors, the Gila National Wilderness, the first national wilderness in the United States is right there in Silver City, as the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, the national monument, that area north of Silver City is just so beautiful. That national monument was established by Teddy Roosevelt. It was one of the first national monuments in the United States. Lots of history in Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for more information. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are in the Bustos Media Broadcast Center here. We've got five radio stations under one roof. We're in the studio that is the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on The Buckmaster Show. We continue now in studio with our contributor on faith and spirituality, my friend, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at Tucson St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. And if folks have not visited St. Philip's, it's just an amazing experience. It's one of the most welcoming places, I feel, in Tucson. And that's kind of what you strive, that's really what St. Philip's is all about, Father Robert.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
And the welcome mat is out.
It is. Well, and you know, I as you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, not thinking too highly of churches.
So for me, quick side of that.
Yeah, no, I when I was younger, I had a number of losses, my sister and my mother and lots of other ones. And so, you know, so I decided that I didn't believe in God. And then for a long time, was a fairly militant atheist. And then I realized, later.
You were like the least person that one would think would wind up
absolutely.
In the position you are in right now. I mean,
everyone was pretty shocked, I have to say, most of all me. Whenever I preach, whenever I'm at the church, I always think if this is the first time someone's giving church a chance, or if it's the last chance they're giving the church, I want them to have a reason to come back.
There'll be a reason to come back. Let's give our listeners some very simple things. Earlier, as in the introduction, I said how the holiday season does accentuate feelings. Let's talk about something positive, simple things some of our listeners could do to maybe make things a little more merry.
Yeah, I mean, I think one very simple thing is looking outward, right? Finding some way to serve others, rather than sort of spending the time sort of thinking, you know, dwelling on what might not be quite right, sort of focus on how they can make things better for other people. And my own experience in life has been that those moments where we're sort of called out of ourselves are the moments where we remember what's important. And sort of reconnect with something bigger than our own sort of worries of the day. And so finding some way to serve, some way to make the lives of someone around you better. And I'm not telling you some huge thing. I'm talking, you know, you make a pie and take it to your neighbor. I mean, we're not talking complicated things. And I find that those little small moments of sort of love and joy are the kind of connective tissue that makes community and that makes our lives feel like they have a sense of connection and meaning. And then I think spending time on some sort of kind of gratitude work, sort of going back through and saying, what am I grateful for? And what have I learned from the experiences that weren't so great? And how do I metabolize those experiences to help feed something new in my life? So that work of trying to be grateful in all things and for all things is part of the work of joy. And I think in this culture, we make the mistake of conflating happiness for joy. Happiness is that sort of fleeting sense of, oh, I like that. Joy is that deep sense of purpose and connection and meaning. And that's really what these holidays can catalyze, is that deeper sense of joy that kind of moves beyond just needing to be happy, which is the kind of constant drive of our culture.
Happiness is, you could be happy one moment and then you could be sad. It's a fleeting kind
yes.
of feeling. Yep. When you're talking about joy, really goes to the core, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's that enduring thing. You know, it's the difference between pretty and beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. There are many things that are perhaps not pretty that nonetheless have a beauty to them, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that the superficial ways that our culture sort of markets us happiness or prettiness sort of takes us out in some ways out of a deeper sense of joy and out of a deeper sense of what's beautiful. And so I think part of the real work that we can do in the season is not necessarily trying to figure out, oh, what will make me happy. You can just pour a glass of gin if that's what you're trying for. But I think what we're really being called to is something more substantive and something more real and lasting. And that's probably the most important work we could do in a season like this, is when, again, in that time out of time where we can spend a little time reflecting on what's most important to us and figure out how do we live and act on that in our lives.
Where does "it's more blessed to give than receive" come from?
Oh, in Scripture. I mean, you said there are so many references to giving and generosity, and I think at the heart of that is that what God is calling us to do is live as God lives and love as God loves, which is a selfless, self-sacrificial way of being that is modeled for us in the church by Jesus. And there's a reason that tenet is at the core of every faith tradition, right? There's a wisdom there that I think transcends traditions. And so there must be something to it because it's been one of those sort of enduring things. And you know what? Modern science is telling us that these things are true. When you look at the data around what gives people a sense of joy in their life and a sense of meaning, it is almost always directly linked to their capacity for generosity.
It is. And there, I don't know if it's like it lets off some kind of endorphins or something, but when I give a gift to someone, I don't know, maybe it's this stage of life, but it's so much more meaningful to me than receiving a gift.
Yes, there's a stress in trying to hold on to everything, right? I was just reading the other day, you know, that over the course of 20 years, the market performance is what, about 8.2%, something like this, right? The average individual investor, they get anxious when there's little ripples in the market and they pull their money out and they make rapid adjustments. And so the average individual investor's return is about 2.5%. Mm-hmm. And my takeaway from that is the more control we try and exert, the poorer we get. Mm-hmm. And it happens in every aspect of our lives. And so mm-hmm. I think there's a giving away of our life that is crucial. And we're all going to give our lives away for something. Mm-hmm. And if we only do it for ourselves, I think it's a great poverty. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the richest people I know are not the ones with the most money. They're the ones who have the deepest sense of self-offering, who have made something of their lives because they want to make something of other people's lives.
Well, you have a terrific staff at St. Philip's, the paid staff, but then the people that really keep things going, no offense here, but are your volunteers. And I'm thinking about that very big event. Who was it that visited the church? And it would not have been possible this fall without the volunteers.
Oh, yeah, our diocesan convention.
That was a big deal.
That was a huge deal. So every church from across the state sends all the clergy from around the Diocese of Arizona sort of gather once a year for something called Diocesan Convention. And so we hosted that this year. And yeah, the volunteers were extraordinary. I mean, we had, I can't remember how many volunteers there were, but a huge number of them. And just everything from food to greeters to parking lot attendants, you know, they did it all. And, you know, and I had the great gift of just getting to show up and wave, you know, basically.
Shake hands, right, with everybody. Right. So what do you want our listeners to think about this holiday season?
I mean, what I would love for people to be thinking about is how do we all go about the deeply needed work of seeing one another as valuable again and seeing one another
after
as a
what
gift.
We've been through.
Absolutely. Yes. And sort of understanding one another as our differences as a gift, understanding that in one another are so many different ways that our lives are enriched in those relationships. And, you know, as I always say, we can be right or we can be in relationship. We don't get to have both all the time. Mm-hmm. And we've got to get over the addiction of being right now. And move back to prioritizing relationships. So that's where I hope people will spend their time in this coming year and recognize those relationships for the gift they are and sort of spend some time deepening those and spend some time to sort of trying to reconnect maybe with people they've lost touch with, but also I think reconnect with themselves through that work of relationship building.
And this anxiety about what's next.
Yeah, there's so much of it. I mean, what can we do? I mean, we can all either live in the anxiety or we can decide we're going to build what's next together.
And have a wonderful time at St. Philip's because you've got a full calendar, right?
We do. Christmas Eve is, we have services at 3, 5, 7, 9, and 11, and they'll all be packed. But it's a real joy to do it every year, and it's always so fun to see so many people come together, people who have never been there before and people who are old friends, and it's a great joy.
And folks will see me, being the traditionalist, on the actual day, Christmas Day. What are you, 10 a.m. for the
yes,
service?
Yes, 10 a.m. on Christmas
I'll
Day.
I'll be there.
We'll
Thank
see you there.
Thank you very much, Father Robert, to you and yours and the whole your family and the St. Philip's family and the extended family a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas to you.
And Merry Christmas to all of your listeners, too.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Father Robert and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill here wishing everybody well.